but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
If you're not following George Reister on social media, you should. He does a great job. He's been interviewing a lot of coaches, a lot of athletic directors. He's outspoken. He's knowledgeable. Played at Oregon. Former tight end in the NFL as well. And he's joining us now to talk a little bit about football in general. George Reister III, how are you, sir?
What's up, man? I'm happy to be back on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Love having you back. Tell us about the Unafraid Show. How did you come up with the Unafraid Show?
Well, I actually came up with the name about 6 years ago, and it was really a transition point in my life because I was on the radio. I've been on the radio for a couple of years and was really trying to find my own voice and really wanted to be authentically me, whether it's on the radio, on TV, or in anywhere else, and in real life, that the same person shows up in the same place. And I was like, it's time to be unafraid. And if people like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. And that's how I came up with the name.
You recently interviewed Rob Mullins, the Oregon AD. What did you learn in that interview?
Yes. Well, I learned a bunch of things. I've learned that how good of a leader that he is. Right, is that the vision that he had for Oregon, the vision that he's had for, you know, for the college football playoff and a lot of things, that he's been a guy who has been, you know, at the forefront of, you know, of where the direction of college football is heading. And I've noticed that he actually has some, in some off-camera moments, that he actually has some ideas and some visions for the future, but at the same time, he's very respectful of the current leadership and, you know, making sure that we don't step on any toes. And because he's a politician at his finest, but the kind that you want around, the one who's really invested in doing the right things.
George, Oregon in the Big Ten looks like it's working for Oregon. I don't know if there's a better realignment story than the Ducks in the Big Ten Conference. What do you make of Dan Lanning's first season, 13-0, and then the punch in the nose in the Rose Bowl?
Ooh. First thing, you can't bat your eyes at 13-0, right? Is that when you come from the Pac-12, and I think it also speaks volumes to the things that people said about the Pac-12. Oh, the Pac-12 is overrated, soft football, and they can't come in here and do this. And then you come in there and you take care of the biggest brands in college football during the season. I think it's the first time ever that anybody has ever beaten Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, and Penn State all in the same season. And so you are excited about that. The Ducks have won, 8 Big Ten championships already this year, which is incredible. So you're actually owning the conference in not just football, but in other sports. But to go back to that Rose Bowl moment, I mean, I think that that's a learning lesson, right? Is that it's the first year of the college football playoff, and I do believe that Ohio State was the only team that could beat Oregon. And I think it's a testament to the playoff structure of, you know, of whether it's seeding or whether it's buys, because all the teams that had buys, they struggled early in games. And when you struggle against a team as talented as Ohio State is, in the beginning of the game and you get down, you are going to, it's an insurmountable hill that has been, that you would have to climb. And I actually got a chance to talk to Will Howard at the rookie premiere on Saturday, and he was talking about that, and he was like, man, look, I never thought that game would go like that. And he said that he thought the layoff was a big deal, and that even if Ohio State had started slowly, that they wouldn't have been able to catch up. I just think it's, you know, it's when people talk about games, they're like, oh, well, if this team played 10 times, if they played 100 times, who would win 100 times? I think that was one of those outlier games that you would get if you play, you know, a series or something like that.
George Reister with us, former NFL tight end, former tight end with the Oregon Ducks. Is there a danger in overreacting to the loss to Ohio State too much? You've seen teams do this, George, where they'll lose a game that, you know, in a fashion like that, and then they'll go, wait a minute, what are we doing wrong? Well, maybe they weren't doing anything wrong. Maybe it was just Ohio State's day and Oregon was sitting for 24 days, and it's as simple as that. Is there a danger in drawing too much of a conclusion from a loss like that?
Yes, 100%. There, because you can't ignore all the trials, tribulation, its adversity, and good play that you had in those previous 13 games. But I do believe that there are some lessons to be learned without overreacting, that you can say, okay, so if the playoff format in terms of timing is going to be the same, maybe we take a different approach to practice if we do have another bye. Then maybe there's another approach to the schedule in terms of how we manage our bodies and our preparations if we are going to have a bye. So I think that those are the lessons that can be learned, that it's small tweaks as opposed to, because I know that there were some people that were truly, you know, disappointed, bummed out, frustrated with that loss, and they want to throw the entire baby out, but don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. How can you look at the season and be frustrated with the Big Ten championship and say, oh, we need to switch everything up? How would you need to switch everything up? It would be different if Ohio State beat you in the regular season and then they beat you in the postseason too. No, you beat them in the regular season, and it was the postseason structure and format that now you have to get adjusted to, because this is that was Dan Lanning's first time as the head coach in the postseason. So I guarantee he learned lessons from it, and that's how you get seasoned. It is very rare that you see a coach who is inside of 6 years on the job win a national championship.
George, Dante Moore will seemingly be the quarterback at Oregon next season if all goes as expected. Dylan Gabriel last season, Bo Nix before that. What should we expect from Dante Moore?
Okay. Now, I've had a chance to see Dante Moore throw the football for a couple of years because him and my son, they train at the same place out here in Cali. And he is the best non-professional throwing the football that I've ever seen. And like the kid just, it's a beautiful thing with him throwing the football. However, though, the issue, though, is that quarterbacking is not just about throwing the football. A lot of it has to do with, you know, it's processing, it's decision making, it's leadership. And those are the things that he had trouble with his first year starting at UCLA. So presumably those things have been fixed with a year under Will Stein, a year sitting behind Dylan Gabriel, and then you'll get an opportunity to see the best version of him. But in terms of can he make every single throw, there's not a throw in the football field that the kid cannot make at a very high level. And if he is processing quickly and leading this team, I know that you're going to be able to see a special player. But I would also say that you may don't get too excited because you might only see him for 1 year.
One season and he'll move on. You're watching, yep. Watching players with the portal and NIL hire agents. Some of these agents know what they're doing. some of these guys, I don't think, you know, they're real agents, and they're just looking to take 10 or 15% and lead a player to a dead end.
You couldn't. You missed 5% off of that. I'm serious. And this is something that I'm super passionate about that I've talked to a lot of kids about. There are these quote-unquote agents who are scumbags, who are charging kids 20% on their NIL money. And when I'm talking about NIL money, I'm talking about the NIL money that is really pay-for-play money. Because for everybody who's listening, when you hear the term NIL, there's actually two sections of it. There is the pay-for-play part of it, which they're calling NIL, but it's really pay-for-play. And then there's the other part, which is the real name, image, and likeness. Like if you have a deal with Les Schwab Tires, or you have it with Apple, or you have it with, you know, Pepe, or any local business, like those are the real NIL deals. Well, yes, a marketing agency or an agent, that it's standard practice to charge in between 15 and 20% on the actual NIL, but they're charging 20% on to some of these kids on their pay-for-play money. And wow, that pay-for-play money is it's like getting drafted in the NFL. If an agent were trying to charge you 20% on that, like, they're not doing anything. You got drafted, you got yourself paid. So it's a dirty game. And you have a guy like, and you do have some credible NFL agents who are getting into the game now, and it's better for the younger players. But when you have these uncles and friends and homeboys and predators out here doing it, it's dirty and it's bad to see.
George Reister with us, former NFL tight end and also Oregon Duck. You know, you're watching some reputable agents, some not. You're seeing schools like Miami outbid Georgia and Oregon. What do you make of kind of what has happened to the market itself? And what would you tell a young player, George, who was trying to get into this space and who, you know, eyes wide open, doesn't know what to do?
Well, the kid that kind of you were referring to, his name is Jackson Cantwell, yeah, the offensive lineman. Some people have him as the number one offensive lineman in the country. He goes to Miami over Georgia and Oregon. Now, I mean, if in that situation, the kid really didn't have any bad options. Alex Mirabal has done a great job as the offensive line coach down at Miami, who used to be at Oregon. Terry over at Oregon is doing a great job. Georgia's put a lot of kids out. But the market is the issue. So there is a bidding war, particularly this year, John. This year is a very different year than any other year because a lot of these schools are clearing money out of their collectives in anticipation for the house settlement. Now, what's going to happen with the house settlement is everybody thinks that this is going to be the magic bullet to fix everything, and it's not. It's actually going to cause some immediate problems that are going to cause more lawsuits, but they will get fixed. Now, the best thing that we've heard in the last few days is that the conferences are trying to get their members to sign away their rights in terms of enforcement. Because right now the NCAA has basically no power, particularly in the football space. So what's going to happen, John, is that remember I told you that there is the two portions of the NIL. There's the pay for play, and then there's the actual NIL. So the house settlement says that there's for this year that there's going to be approximately $20.5 million, a technical salary cap that can be spread amongst all your sports and all of this stuff. Football is going to take the lion's share. It's going to be about $12 to $15 million at every single school. Well, what's going to happen is that some of these schools have promised players more money than they're going to be able to have. So what they've done is they've either paid out essentially signing bonuses to these players that as long as they get it before July 1st, then it won't count against the salary cap. But what's going to happen is the schools that have signed 2 and 3 year deals to players, they're going to be over the cap in some areas. And then they're either going to have to say, well, we can't pay you, which is then going to trigger lawsuits against their collectives, which are going to be disbanded anyway, but that's a whole nother thing. And then the other part is that there's going to be either lawsuits against the accounting firm Deloitte, which is going under the guise of NIL Go, which they're going to say, because there was a school last year who ran NIL deals through Deloitte as like a test run, and they came back, and this is a major school. Only 3 players came back on their team. Now, mind you, this is a top 10 caliber team. Only 3 players came back as quote-unquote having a value over $20,000. Well, what happens when somebody gets a deal over that that's in the community or something like that? Then the players are then going to sue. So that's going to become a whole nother problem. So it's getting fixed. It's just not getting fixed as fast as people would probably hope.
You played a position tight end that is now being viewed as, you know, when I asked Jonathan Smith, you know, what position do you want a 5-star player at? He's going to say quarterback. And I said, what's your second position? He's going to say tight end from an offensive standpoint. A lot of guys would love a defensive tackle or a quarterback, but that tight end position, George, we're watching teams draft tight ends higher, value yep. tight ends more. Did you see that coming in your era, or what has happened at that tight end position?
I think the offensive coordinators have gotten more savvy and is that tight end. So if you have 2 tight ends on the field, it is actually one of the hardest matchups for the defense, because especially if they can both run and catch and at least one of them is a really good blocker. Now, if you send 2 tight ends on the field, so you have 2 tight ends, probably 2 wide receivers and one running back. John, are we going to run the football or are we going to pass the football?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to.
So,
You're an eligible receiver, yep.
Exactly. So the defense doesn't know whether to send out 5 DBs or 3 linebackers, or maybe they need 4 linebackers. So now it creates such, are they going to line up tight? Are they going to line up wide? It's actually one of the biggest mismatches for the defense, and they don't know what is actually coming, especially if you have 2 really good tight ends and they both can run and catch, and one of them especially is a really good blocker. So now it creates situations for the defense where they're not even sure what personnel to put on the field. So the offense, particularly the offensive coordinator, if he's really good, he can keep the defense off balance. And that's why Jonathan Smith said that about that tight ends are so valuable and where he wants 5-star talent.
I am curious from an NFL standpoint what you think Travis Hunter will be in the Jaguars system and what you make of a guy who coaches are saying will play 2 ways.
Okay, so I got a chance to spend a little time with Travis Hunter at the rookie premieres last weekend too. First of all, the kid's a fabulous human. Like, he's a fabulous human. And he's one of those kids that just is happy to be alive. You know what I mean? And
yes.
And that I'm actually really glad that he has good people around him, because he's such a good person that if I had asked him for the shirt off of his back, he would have gave it to me. And so that leaves room for people to try to take advantage of you. So that's first thing. But I believe that he just loves to play football, and that the Jaguars are going to initially try to acquiesce this plan of, you know, and give him his heart's desire of playing both ways. But I do believe that reality is going to set in on the toll that it's going to take on his body, and he will play both ways. But I do think that he will be primarily a wide receiver. And then he'll be able to add value on defense, returning kicks, particularly punts, and things like that. that he'll be able to add value there as opposed to be a full-time position player there.
You were fired up in the wake of the Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese spat, or you know, even a flagrant one, yes, and all the discussion afterwards. You were all fired up about this, but everybody's analyzing, overanalyzing Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, every other player. Nobody's talking about basketball. Everybody's talking about race. Yes. Everybody's talking about jealousy. I think this is good for the WNBA. I think you agree with that. But why do you think people want to make it so much about race?
I think it's hard for I think that this is a women's issue, John. I think that people that for some reason that when it comes to women playing sports, that where our brains break and they feel like that there's a need to defend Caitlin Clark or defend Sabrina Ionescu or defend Angel Reese. They don't need defending. They are ultimate competitors. How many times have we seen in these playoffs a flagrant foul by Draymond Green or by anybody else? And we don't get a 3,000-word think piece about it or somebody going on social media, oh my God, they hate her guts. So what if they do? Who cares? Michael Jordan and Isaiah Thomas hated each other. Who cares? And it's actually great for the game. Caitlin Clark needs Angel Reese. And I know that people are like, what the hell are you talking about, George? She is the golden child right now, the hero. Who would Batman be without the Joker? Who would Batman be without the Penguin? Who would, you know, Superman be without Kryptonite? Who would, you know, the Avengers be without Thanos? Nobody cares about you the same without a nemesis. Think about Sabrina Ionescu, for example. She had no villain, and she's just as good of a player as Caitlin Clark is probably, mm-hmm, but she didn't have a villain. If you have obstacles that are coming in front of the superhero constantly, that makes people want to root for you. And she went to Iowa. It's not a traditional basketball school. She was playing up against, you know, super teams and stacked teams and holding her own. So everybody, they want to make Angel Reese out to be this villain, but she's not a villain. She's just the antagonist to the protagonist in this story, and the protagonist needs the antagonist.
I think it's good for the WNBA. How does the WNBA capitalize on it? We shall see. George Reister, you're the best. Appreciate you coming on for people, the Unafraid podcast, Unafraid. Check it out with George Reister. He's interviewing some big people. George, thank you.
Yes, sir. All right, thanks, John. I appreciate the time.
There he goes. Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, what do you make of it? 503-417-7575. So everybody was talking about come Monday. Now everybody's kind of settled into, hey, the WNBA has Angel Reese's back. How does the league promote that and draft off the success of it or the interest in it without sort of fanning the flames in a way that becomes negative for the WNBA? That's the tricky part for Kathy Engelberg's league, because you've got a star player in Caitlin Clark, you've got an Angel Reese figure in this that it creates a polarizing viewpoint and some interest, brings you some eyeballs to your game. But how do you make it not about race when so many people look at it and go, it's about race? 503-417-7575.